This is Circulating Ideas. I'm Leah White, filling in for Steve Thomas, who yet again has decided to trust me with his baby, and by baby I mean his podcast. My guest today is Sarah Strahl, Assistant Director of Technology and Technical Services at the Ela Area Public Library in Lake Zurich, Illinois. Welcome to the show, Sarah.
Hi, Leah.
Hi. So just a little heads up to the listeners. Sarah and I work together at the Ela Area Public Library, and I was really excited when we got the opportunity to bring her on Circulating Ideas because I think some of the stuff she does is really awesome. So with that, we're going to get started. I always like to start with what I call your librarian creation myth. And by that, I mean, what was your path to librarianship? So how did you decide to become a librarian?
So I had a house with chicken legs, and I'm just kidding, because
that is hilarious.
I had to go with the mythology for real first.
Yeah.
So because my real life path is a lot more boring. I mean, I think like a lot of people, it started in childhood with a really great library that I went to all of the time. And for me, that was the New Albany Floyd County Public Library in New Albany, Indiana.
Awesome.
And, you know, it kind of built from there, and going to college, I actually thought I was going to be a forensic scientist. I majored in anthropology and criminal justice, and then I realized that most of what I wanted to do was going to involve me becoming a cop or doing a lot more science education, and I realized that that was not exactly the path I wanted to be taking, and I liked it a lot better in mystery books and in like television shows than I really did for me as a career choice. So I started working in insurance because I didn't know what else to do, and my dad works in insurance, my sister works in insurance, my uncle works in insurance, and I just, you know, it was like the family business. Mm-hmm. So I got a job opportunity and I took it. And that was a mistake. But it did teach me a lot about customer service and how to deal with people who are immediately off the bat not on your team.
Yeah.
You know, not like they are coming at you with a feeling of conflict because they know that you have an agenda and they have their agenda. And those two agendas are never really going to meet that well in homeowners insurance. So it was very big lesson in how to deal with people. Especially people who are angry at you right off the bat.
No, that's really good experience.
Yeah.
It's interesting because I think from like a lot, often we look at people coming to librarianship from either they worked at a library their whole lives or they are coming from like a customer service background. I love the idea that you came to it from this kind of troubleshooting aspect.
Yes.
It really is.
I mean, you really just had to try and get the people to realize that, you know, you're on their side as much as you can be within the definition of policy. And we use a lot of policy here. It's not as inscrutable as homeowners insurance policies are.
I would hope not.
Yeah. But, you know, it still kind of comes from some of the same places, and it's meant to minimize the conflicts that you have, not exacerbate them.
Yeah.
So I also worked in undergrad. I worked in the Herman B. Wells Library. I was the muscle for the library. I tore down metal shelving and moved it to, we took down all sorts of shelves and moved them to like junkyards and to scrap metal places and stuff like that. That was like our whole job. It was me and another girl named Susan.
That's awesome.
And yeah, we were a pretty great team actually. And we both got really, really buff that like time that we were working. And we became really actually pretty close friends, but we haven't kept in touch. And I, like, when I think about that experience, I'm always like, where is Susan? And why can't I remember her last name so I can track her down on Facebook?
Susan the shelf builder.
Yeah. And tear her down.
Yeah.
Downer. So I had worked in the library in that capacity. And then while I was in insurance, I was massively unhappy. I was working Hurricane Cat team duty, which is like catastrophe. So I was in a call center in Aurora because four hurricanes had hit Florida in the same year. It was 2004. And there was no place for us to actually be in Florida. So they set up a call center and had people who were already in the on the ground in Florida doing all of the estimation and stuff like that, and then sending them back to us as packages.
Wow, that's really intense.
Yeah, it was super intense. Yeah. It was a very intense experience. It was also exhausting and stressful. I got shingles while I was in Chester.
That like from the stress?
Yeah, from the stress I got shingles.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Oh, insurance people. I feel sorry for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like I said, it was an extremely good experience. It was also really hard. And I am not shy about admitting that typically. So So I moved from that and I started dating somebody very briefly who was in library school, and met a lot of people who were also in library school through that person. And like the way they talked about their courses, the way they talked about libraries, the way they talked about people and books and like all of that stuff just made me get really interested in the idea. I kind of fell in love with the idea of being in library school just from I did not fall in love with that person, but I did fall in love with library school.
That's perfect.
And I felt like it was a calling. Like the more I thought about it, the more I was like, this is perfect for me. Why didn't I think about this before? You know, so I just kind of went from there to going to library school. I had got my application written, and I told my boss that at the insurance company, I was like, well, I'm moving back to Bloomington because I really wanted to be in Bloomington and not in Indianapolis. I was the place where I was adjusting was in Indianapolis, and I did not want to live in Indianapolis anymore. And I told her that the library school was in Bloomington and I couldn't go to one in Indianapolis, which was a total lie. Yeah. I'm sorry, Vicky.
You gotta do what you gotta do.
Yeah, but I was just like, I need to get out of here entirely. And then I actually went and worked for another insurance company, but it was a much less stressful job. I actually just graded motor vehicle records for truckers. And the only stress from that is now every time I see certain trucking companies, it like freaks me out because I'm like, you had so many drunk drivers.
Oh gosh.
Yeah.
So everyone drives safely.
Yes.
Excellent. Oh, that's good. That's a great story.
So that's
just as good as a house on chicken legs.
Yes. I wish I had a house on chicken legs. That would be amazing.
What myth is that again?
Baba Yaga.
Yes, Baba Yaga.
Yeah.
That is awesome.
Which isn't a creation myth in any way, shape, or form, but it is a great myth.
We can pretend like it is. Yeah. okay, so Sarah, now that we know kind of what led you to this path, can you talk a little bit about what you are doing currently? Because I think you have a really unique job title, and just so everyone knows what that is, it's Assistant Director of Technology and Technical Services. So can you talk a little bit about what you do right now?
Sure. And that is definitely a mishmash job title, because I wanted to be like director of innovation or chief innovation officer, but I really like feel like the word innovation is kind of overused as well, and it doesn't necessarily describe exactly what I do. So we went with a really kind of bland descriptive term instead of like an exciting newfangled one that was really branded and anyway.
And actually described what you do, because you do work a lot in innovation. It's a huge part of your job.
Right. Yes, it is a big part of my job. So in technical services, I was head of technical services first. So what I started doing with that is electronic resources and all. So basically, the way I think of it is all of the materials in the building are somehow filtered through me. Mm-hmm. And that includes electronic and digital resources.
Yeah.
So to me, it's budget management, collection development. Not that I am developing a particular collection, but helping selectors with their collection development goals, collection management policies, stuff like that.
Yeah, you're our budget maven.
Yes, I am the budget maven. And then I also, when we added IT onto that, because it kind of made sense with all of the technology things that I do, I came into electronic resources. It's kind of an odd position for a public library.
Mm-hmm.
Because electronic resources are often in like reference departments in public libraries.
Yeah.
And so to have like that job title be a technical services thing is much more, I find, in academic libraries. Do you find that in the technical services role?
Yeah. You know, that makes a lot of sense, though, because when you think about things like access and, you know, connecting people actually to them. I think that actually makes a lot of sense with technical services, because much about what tech services does is finding ways to connect people to the things.
Exactly. That is our whole mission. And I always said that technical services is like one of the most, if not the most, collaborative department in the library. We work with every department on something or another. And with adding electronic resources into that, that even broadens that horizon, I guess. And so, and yeah, my biggest thing when I took over technical services was getting our electronic resources into our catalog by hook or by crook. The way it ended up happening is not necessarily my favorite thing that's happened. I really wanted ebooks to be in our BiblioCommons catalog when we had BiblioCommons. And then we lost BiblioCommons and moved to Enterprise through Cersei. And the gain we got from that was that we have now ebooks and e-audiobooks through the catalog, which is awesome. And we also worked with people at Cersei Dynex and people at EBSCO for EDS, and got our electronic resources into the catalog as a more resources tab right through the catalog. And to me, that's important because when I hear people talk about our website, they are talking about our catalog.
Absolutely.
The actual, like, EAPL.org is not our website to them. The catalog is our website.
And I think that's such a good point. It's one of those things where I think, like, in library school, there are some library schools that don't even require cataloging anymore, which I think is kind of a mistake, because it's, when you think about what, how we're going to connect with people remotely, which is just going to become more and more and more important, that's through the catalog. Like, that, we have to understand how that works and have experts who can do that.
And my biggest beef probably about the electronic resources to this day being in the catalog, I have two big beefs with that. One being the quality of the records that we're allowed to put in from Overdrive. Sorry, Overdrive, but let's work on your records.
Why are they so
and
terrible?
Really, everybody, everybody who is a vendor, if you are listening to this, please let us edit our own records or do something where we can put stuff directly into our catalog, but you have decent metadata. Your metadata is terrible. It's terrible, and people can't find what they're looking for because it's only in one place or another, or, you know, like... There is this thing called cross-genres where you can have a sci-fi mystery romance, and it's all one book. It's just something to think about.
I think that's such a good point, because if you think about it, one of the biggest growing fields in librarianship, and one of the, like, when you go to conferences, when there's programs going on, it's... metadata is just more important than ever. So the idea of giving us a little bit of control and trusting us with that, like, we are, we're experts.
And we actually have our own backup records, that because the records that go into Enterprise now do not show in the Cersei Dynex side of the catalog. The stuff that your frontline staff are looking at when you're looking at books. So we actually have records that we still create for ebooks, so that you guys can see that something is an ebook form, and then you can direct the patron to go check it out on Overdrive. So my other, so we still get to edit those, but those aren't the ones we get to put into Enterprise. Second beef is that with big things like Hoopla and some of our other electronic resources where access is a totally different model, where it's a token system like Freegal, and they offer us catalog records, and they're like, oh, you can have all the catalog records. Like, Freegal is like, just take our catalog records, if we're supposed to charge you, but take them. And I'm like, I don't want to put 2 million catalog records into my database that are mostly like, I'm sorry, Freegal, I do love you, we have great cost per use, but a lot of your stuff is karaoke. Like, let's not lie. It's karaoke records, and that's great, but...
It's useful for a very specific segment of the population.
And...
karaoke.
And there's other stuff on there. I mean, I know Freegal has a lot of great stuff, but there is a lot of stuff that I don't want to put into my catalog. And it's hard to get through 2 million records. I mean, that's...
Yeah. It's almost too much. It's like...
Yeah.
It's like one or the other, feast or famine.
Right. And with Hoopla, it's sort of a similar thing. And once we get your records in, then you're not going back and taking them back out.
Yeah.
You know, we have to do these periodic things with our Hoopla titles that expire. And if we don't re-up them, then we have to go back and do, like, cleanup projects and start taking that
and
stuff out.
Them.
And with Hoopla, the contracts can change whenever.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not getting, like, sweeping cleanup projects. You know, it's just so much stuff that we would have to go through. So that's my other beef, is that model, which I really love.
Yeah.
The you have access to everything. And it's up to you to choose what you want instead of, like, buying title by title. I like that model a lot. I just find that it makes catalog access a problem.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really interesting.
And I don't have a good solution for it yet.
Well, listeners, work on that.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about how you integrated the IT department into this existing... So you've worked on, you've been managing electronic resources and technical services for a while, and it's been,
It's been about a year since our director approached me and asked me if I would be interested in sort of reimagining our IT department. And so I feel like there's a lot of disparate pieces of this, but it makes sense in the fact that I like technology and I speak the technology language. I'm a pretty good liaison between the IT people and the rest of the library.
Yeah, I always like to describe you as a translator.
Yeah.
Like, you take these complicated topics that often can be really tough for some public service folks to wrap their head around.
Right.
And then you translate it to the public service staff, like, here is why we do it this way, here are the things we can do for you. Like, it's a translator.
And I sometimes worry that the more IT actual, like, nitty-gritty things that I do, because I did take on a weekend shift as an IT person. I am working an evening-ish shift as an IT person. So the more IT things that I actually get to know about, I feel like I might be getting worse at translating. I hope that I...
Don't get lost!
Yeah. I hope that I can sort of stay focused on, like, how do I explain this to people who are not, like, behind the scenes on the nitty-gritty servers and things like that. So the integration, I mean, they're still kind of disparate pieces, but... So my favorite thing that I think was the crossover was that we got a help desk ticket for IT that was about a music program that wasn't working on the public side computers as well as the desk staff would like. And my solution was to have optical drives that patrons could take home, and we did that out of the experiential materials budget.
Which we're going to talk about later.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And so it was like I took this IT issue and was able to solve it with a technical services perspective. And I don't know that many other people would get to be able to do that.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. Like, it's like the aha moment when you're like, this is why we did this.
Right.
This is why we merged these
departments,
because it makes sense to have a lot of this kind of under the
And it, an it breaks down a lot of silos. And I also, like, my focus is admin and budget management and developing staff and working with all of these people in very different ways, but they all, like, almost everybody I work with has a very detail-oriented job, and I am a very big-picture person.
Yeah.
So I get to be the big-picture person in a lot of detail-oriented job roles. And I get to work with all of these people and get all of their ideas, because they have big ideas, too. I don't want to make it seem like that's not... that's not the case, because people can be detail-oriented and still have big-picture ideas, but they can then bring them to me, and then I can actually make them happen out in the greater library. And so
helping shape vision's really crucial.
Right.
Yeah, like you set a tone, which is really important. So that's what you do now, but one of the things that I think is really interesting is your job path to this. So can you talk a little bit about your path to your current job
and what that transition was like, because you used to, I like to call it front of the house and back of the house, because I waited tables for a long time. So front of the house is public service staff, back of the house is, you know, like infrastructure. So can you talk a little bit about what that transition was like and, and your job path?
Sure. So I started out as the teen services librarian, and I like to think of that as being sort of, like, I really, at the time, I thought that was going to be it, that was going to be my end-all be-all, that I was going to be a teen services librarian, but it was also the assistant department head of popular materials, and popular materials had taken on managing Overdrive and some of the digital popular materials, and I got really interested in that. And Erica, our current assistant director, who was the who hired me in popular materials, she and I worked a lot on like developing hands-on programs. I worked with our electronic resources manager at the time, Esteban, on like just various things and working with him on Overdrive and electronic resources and digital initiatives and stuff. And then we developed the Nook program, which is now a Nexus tablet program. It was kind of, I had a technology focus, even though I was running anime club and doing craft programs and bringing in scientists from Fermilabs and stuff like that. Like, I was still doing a lot of teen stuff. It was the main focus of my, in fact, on my door, all I had, even though I had this huge long job title, it just said teen services librarian. Because that was what I wanted to focus on, and that was what I thought my career was going to be forever. And then I really wanted to work with the electronic resources, and so there were a couple job openings at the time, and I ended up in the technical services position with our, like I said, our electronic resources had been with Esteban. Esteban had just left at that same time, or not, a little bit before that, actually. And so there was this flux in these jobs that were kind of open, and it was a great time to take electronic resources and merge them with technical services. It just kind of happened that way, and it was perfect. It actually made so much sense. And I went from managing three part-time pages in the popular materials department to managing five full-time staff and a number of part-time staff in the technical services department. And then, like I said, about a year ago, we built on this IT thing, and it added about, I actually started January 1st of this year, but I had started the transition, I think, in late October, early November, to taking over and building a job description. We hired a new person in the IT department and sort of reinventing how the IT department functioned. And I think it's been going pretty well.
Yeah, it's been definitely, as someone on the other side of things, it's definitely going well. And I wonder, do you think your experience working with the public makes you unique in your position? Do you feel like you have any kind of advantage because you've worked, you did public service first?
I do think that I have a broader perspective, although I do think there are technical services people, and I mean, I don't think it's uncommon to find technical services people who worked front of the house jobs, or like our director now, Matt, had started in the reference department, and then he was the head of technical services, and he still worked a reference shift when he was head of technical services, just like I still work a reader's advisory desk shift. So, you know, it just is one of those things where I think you find it a lot, but I do think, and I don't think that being a cataloger and never working a shift at a reference desk makes you a bad technical services manager at all.
No.
I just think it makes you maybe a particular kind of technical services manager. I am a more patron-oriented employee than perhaps many other public or technical services people are. A number of my staff have also come from the circulation department and into cataloging, which gives them a good background in public services as well, I think, and it makes it easier to sort of take the public services part of things and have them understand where that's coming from.
Well, I feel like, I think this varies from library to library, because I've worked with both kinds. But one of the things I really like about the technical services department that you run is that it feels like everyone in the department is very customer-focused. And that also could be a cultural thing for us.
Right.
But it's,
I think that's also kind of goes back to that you define a vision for your department, and part of your vision is being customer focused.
And I tend to also focus on our customers not only being the patrons as end users, but our other library staff, and especially the selectors, but anybody else who comes to us, like the circulation department. We work a lot with circulation on damaged materials, on fees. We don't have fines anymore, but when we have damaged books that need to be replaced and we have to charge a fee, we work with the circulation department to make sure that we're not making their job unduly hard by giving them these like ridiculous, like, this book costs $50. Well, you can get it on Amazon for $5 type situations. We try to find a fair balance with them. So, you know, that's a lot of working with other people, and those are our customer interactions a lot of the time.
Yeah. Well, and I think it also kind of debunks the idea that like catalogers or technical services or IT is this isolated job where people who work there don't work well with people, or it's just such a myth.
Yeah.
Because I think you and your staff are a really good example of the fact that everyone in the library works with everyone now.
Right.
And it's, you have to be able to work with people, and you know, for a successful IT and technical services department, you have to communicate with people. Like, it's so I think it debunks that negative stereotype.
And my staff loves it when we have people back in technical services. We're the ones who have the Friday lunches. We sort of spearhead Friday staff lunches that we have. That's like an informal thing at the library. And we also, you know, we throw a good party.
Yeah.
We throw a very good party.
Yeah,
and we always invite other people from surrounding us to our parties whenever we throw them.
Yeah, you're very good for morale.
Yes. And for everybody's donut consumption.
One of the things I was wondering, especially because you were a teen services librarian, do you feel like your classes in grad school prepared you for the kind of work that you're doing now?
No. I don't. I do think that they, so I will say that I did take a budgeting class, but it was an academic library focused budgeting class because that's just like the one that was offered during the summer when I was trying to slot in my budget class that I had to take to graduate. So I felt like it did not in particular like prepare me for budgeting very well. I mean, it gave me a little bit of theory of budgeting, but not like a lot of what I actually do now.
Yeah.
It was a lot of broad budgeting and not like the really nitty gritty.
Like, here's how you actually manage budgets in an institution.
Right.
Yeah.
Which
is really important.
Right.
Like, a huge part of what you do is when you go up into management, and when you think about it, master degrees librarians now are very often the ones moving into management.
Right.
And there's more and more frontline staff not mastered. So, when you think about the state of library education, one would hope there's going to be more of a shift into these kind of management skills.
And the other thing I would say is teach people how to take an existing budget, because that's the thing we never did. We built a budget from scratch and had no idea if what we were allocating, and no way to like really know if what we were allocating was right, you know, other than if we got an A on the end result or whatever. But when you go into a library, more often than not, the budget's already been established. What you need to do is go in and analyze trends over the past few years, look at what has actually been happening with those budgets. Are you allocating that money successfully? Do the stats and the data that you're taking actually bear out where you're spending your money? And that's the part where I wish that library school had given me a better running start.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I did love some of my classes in library school. They gave me, I had a great teacher named Phil Eskew who taught me reader's advisory. And him and the person who taught our children's and teen services, I felt really prepared going into being a teen services librarian. I felt not at all prepared for going, because I took a class that was it was like access management for information, knowledge, and retrieval. That's what it was called. Instead of taking cataloging, that was the class that I took. So I had
something similar.
Never really cataloged anything.
Yeah.
and that information knowledge or access and retrieval was, we talked like almost the entire time about folksonomies, which is totally awesome. I love folksonomies. One of my assignments was to go to a grocery store and like see why things were arranged the way they were arranged. And it has completely informed like how I think about our catalog.
Yeah.
I still don't know really, I mean, I know how to catalog. I just don't know that I would be the best person to like sit down and try and catalog the newest like Patterson book that came out. So
and there's so many.
Right.
Excellent. That's great. So I've heard you talk in the past about how you manage three departments,
right.
The third being electronic resources. So why do you consider electronic resources a third department?
I personally consider it that because I think that probably a full one third of what I do on any given day is based in user experience and electronic resources.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I do a lot of troubleshooting of our access to those electronic resources. I spent a lot of time getting the access through the catalog, through EDS up and running, and maintenance of that, and exploring new options for things, working on the budget for that. You know, I probably still every day spend about a third of my time working in electronic resources. So for me, I like to think of it as a third department because I am the electronic resources department. But I also think that the Cyber Squad is the electronic resources department as it stands, because I formed the Cyber Squad as a way to get more selector type input into what electronic resources we're putting out. It's an interdepartmental collaborative team of people who have skin in the game of what our electronic resources are, and without whom I could not make decisions, because, you know, it's so good to hear feedback on like children's things from the children's department. And sometimes the teen department chimes in with that too. So, I think with our broader electronic resources collection, forming that and sort of managing that, I mean, you probably get, what, like 5 emails a day from me about Cyber Squad things? Like, I send stuff to the Cyber Squad and ask for feedback all the time.
What's nice, too, about having this cross-departmental initiative that you lead is it really helps to promote the electronic resources with people on the front lines.
Right.
So it has this filtering down effect where if something, I mean, all too often, libraries are making these massive financial purchases, and it almost feels a little hidden. And sometimes your frontline staff might not even know about it yet. So one of the things that's really cool about Cyber Squad is that it has this filtering effect. It helps with promotion as well, which as a public service person, that's something, you know, that I really like.
Well, and it also, at least 1 to 2 people in each public department, including circulation, know something about what the electronic resources we offer are, and had a hand in making that decision as to whether or not we were going to acquire that or renew it. So
it gives them the language.
Right.
So like when you think about how a customer actually interacts with staff, I mean, they're going to ask anyone. They'll ask shelvers, you know, about Overdrive or something.
In fact, shelvers very frequently are the ones bringing us patrons at the reader services desk.
Yeah. So I think like the idea that it's like a very level playing field and that everyone's involved in some kind of way or that representatives from every area are involved, it's just a really nice, like, kind of flat, non-siloed way of dealing with it, which is great.
And there's not really a lot of hierarchy, too, because anyone can bring a resource to the group to check out and have the rest of the group give feedback. I'm plugged more into the electronic resources world, so I'm more frequently the one to bring those out. But anyone who sees something come across their dashboard of, like, their sphere, I guess, is free to bring it to the Cyber Squad. And we've definitely picked electronic resources that way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what's something happening in electronic resources right now that you find really exciting?
So for me, actually, electronic resources manager at Arlington Heights Library had said something that I thought was very interesting. He was like, I am only purchasing learning tools right now.
Interesting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So online learning, we have Gale courses. I would not say we're only purchasing online learning tools, but we just acquired Lendo Library Pro, which is a online learning tool.
Yeah.
We got Gale courses last year and have that up and running.
Which is so cool. You know.
We're looking at Niche Academy right now.
I'm really excited about that, too.
And the Cyber Squad, that's currently what we're sort of focusing on in the Cyber Squad and getting feedback on. And that's one for learning specifically about library products. So it's a totally awesome learning tool. So I think that, to me, is the biggest trend. And it's making libraries, I think, once again, like a center of learning.
Awesome.
You know?
Yeah, totally.
Because definitely anybody can come in here and sit with a book forever and read and learn from that. That's definitely true. But to have actual, like, teachers outside of a classroom setting who are there and responding to you or, like, watching video tutorials and reading text and seeing slides and stuff like that, that's something that you can't actually get in a book.
Yeah.
And would take like a book and a DVD and maybe even like an audio thing and going to somebody else and being like, am I still doing this right? To actually get that same level.
Well, and it hits different learning styles.
Yeah.
It hits people in ways that possibly, like, some people really struggle with learning through reading, so you can reach people in another way that way.
Right.
I also love the kind of remote aspect of it too, that we're meeting people where they are.
Right.
And shy of people going out and paying large sums of money for this. I mean, it's a great equalizer.
Right.
It's really,
And they can use it in the library, you know? So even if they don't have an internet access at home, they could still come here and use our computers to do a not remote connection to these resources.
Well, that's a great point.
So to me, I think that's kind of where we're headed in a lot of, and it kind of goes along with a lot of learning, and, you know, universities going to less traditional styles too. And one of the things I really love is that, there's an actual teacher for Gale courses who's there, and there's a community. And so you can get feedback from other students. Not every product that we have has that. Like Lendo Library is more like videos and tutorials. Like
self-facilitated.
But the fact that some of our resources are starting to have that, and BrainFuse has like live tutors that you can talk to and stuff like that is really exciting.
Oh,
and I think
so
I'm empowering to our, empowerful to our community, you know, where they get to, take it if they it's there if they want it, and they can take it and do whatever they want with it.
Oh, I love that. That is awesome. So awesome. So I know you are involved with the ERL conference. Is that that's what it's called, right?
ERL.
ER and L.
Resources and libraries.
Yeah. Okay, great. So is there, and you can tell by the fact that I can't even say the name correctly, is there a large public librarian representation at that conference?
There is not a large public librarian representation at that conference, and in fact, that's why I got involved with the program planning committee, because I don't even know how exactly I ended up at this dinner, but I was having dinner with the head of ERNL, Bonnie Tiarina, who is an electronic access librarian at Harvard University, and she and her sister Sandy together are ERNL. They are the whole thing.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
right. And so they, and, you know, there are different committee heads and things like that. And, I mean, ERNL is actually a lot of people, but they are the two who started it and who do all of the nitty gritty facilitation stuff. And so I was sitting at dinner with them, and I was like, this would be a great conference for public libraries. Why aren't there more public librarians here? I've only met like five people from public libraries here. And they were like, get on the program planning committee and start bringing in public libraries. So,
oh, I love that, Sarah, because one of the things I love about that is just the idea behind it. Like, if you see something and you're not happy about it, go out and fix it.
Yeah.
Like, you can go out and fix it. And I think that's one of those lessons that's like even broader than just this conference is that if you're not happy with how something's being run, like, how, what can you do to fix it.
And it's not that I'm not happy with how it's being run. Like, I don't want to I don't want to say that at all.
No,
but it is.
I'm not trying to say that you didn't like how the conference was run. But, like, if you see something that you want to see more of, or if you want to enhance something in some way, like, don't wait for someone else to do it. Yeah. Like, get on that committee.
And here's,
go get active.
Here's the thing, public library electronic resource managers, that I want you to know about ERNL. Here's the thing. It is very academic library focused.
Mm-hmm.
And academic libraries are light years ahead of us in terms of electronic resources.
Oh, that's interesting.
They've had they've been talking about web scale discovery forever.
Oh, and it's such a big deal right now.
Yeah, and we're just now being like, what? Web scale discovery? Like, our catalog could look more like Google and actually get people to the results they want with better algorithm. Like, we're all just, and it could incorporate all sorts of resources.
That, like, was literally, like, the hottest thing at ALA this past year was web scale discovery.
Right. And I mean, like, the first time I ever heard that term, it was, like, already old hat at ERNL, and I was, like, so on board and so excited. Like, web scale discovery, this is amazing. How do I do this? Yeah. And I immediately started, like, finding vendors. And vendors didn't even want to work with public libraries on that because we're so small potatoes, you know, in terms of how big our collections are and what we're doing and stuff like that. So it took me a while to find a discovery service that actually wanted to work with us and wanted to scale down with us. And so that's why we ended up with EDS, because they were the first ones that I talked to that were, like, really like, oh yeah, public libraries. We work with public libraries. So yeah.
That's so cool. I mean, I think that's such a good example of why public librarians should attend this conference, because it's, you can, when you step outside your box a little, you can learn a lot.
Right.
And it's one of the things where someone a long time ago gave me an advice, and I know I've said this on the podcast before, but the advice is to, and when you're at a conference, always make sure you go to something that you don't think is necessarily relevant to your job.
Right.
And every time I do it, I learn something.
Right.
Every single time. Something big, too, not little. And so I just, I really wanted to bring that up because I know a lot of the really innovative stuff you've done at our library kind of stem from this conference.
And when I went, Anne Slaughter had sent some of her staff when she was at Oak Park. Sorry, Anne. At Oak Park. So I know, and I feel like there were actually pretty good representation from Illinois public libraries there, but I don't see, and I know there are public librarians there who are just kind of hidden.
Mm-hmm.
I think the thing I need to do is maybe, like, a meetup of public librarians and being like, hey, we're here, and send the word out to your friends. I've tried, but I've had mixed success at getting public librarians involved in ERNL, and I can totally see why. You know, it is, it's a commitment to go to a conference, to any conference.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, your library's budget for that kind of thing is limited, so I definitely see why public librarians might want to go to a place that more caters to public librarians. I just think that it's been so valuable to me to go to electronic resources and libraries and talk to people who work in technical services and manage electronic resources, who have these contract negotiations that are, like, 3,000 times the size of what we have to do here, and budgets that, like, are our entire library's budget, you know, just on electronic resources.
Wow.
And thinking about that, and thinking about such a large scale, and then taking that information and bringing it down to work with our community is the thing that I've been trying to do since I've been going to the conference.
Yeah, very cool.
Yeah.
Very cool. So kind of along the same lines, but a little different. So because I'm your coworker, I know that you manage and facilitate a budget line called experiential materials.
Right.
We talked about it a little bit earlier, but can you start by explaining what that means and talk a little bit about the history of how that budget line was created?
So I really hate the term library of things. I'm sorry, all of the journals who go out and talk about library of things.
Oh, you just
how
disappointed a very small segment of people.
I'm sorry, but things is just not a descriptive enough word for me to, and I know you're trying to keep it vague, but I don't like it.
Yeah.
To me, what we're trying to provide our patrons with is an experience that they may not have the ability to get elsewhere.
Yeah.
Or they might have the ability, but they don't want to do it until they have had the experience. And mm-hmm. So it sort of built out of our Nook program when we first started getting the Nooks. That was like, we put that in what was then a digital materials budget line.
Okay. And the Nooks were e-readers that you were circulating.
Yes.
Which is something I think a lot of libraries do, but they might not even think about it in terms of an experience.
Right.
You know?
And we mm-hmm. thought very conscientiously about, is this an experience that we're giving or is it a book that we're giving? And we actually did a survey to find out the answer to that, and it was mixed.
Yeah.
Some people just wanted to try the Nooks because they'd never had them before, and some people wanted a particular title that we had on the Nooks. And that's how our Nexus 7 program kind of mm-hmm. came about as yeah. well, where we were realizing that people might just want to experience a Nexus 7 or mm-hmm. some other kind of tablet device, but there's also books that they want mm-hmm. that we can give them instantaneous access to through this with our Purchase on Demand program. So to me, that's where it kind of started, was with the Nooks. And then we started, when I took over Electronic Resources, there had been two budget lines for digital materials and electronic resources.
Mm-hmm.
And the digital materials came out of the regular materials budget, and that was for Overdrive, and Freegal came out of there.
Okay.
So it was more like, at the time, the popular materials that we had. And I said, you know what? Why don't we make this our experiential materials budget,
mm-hmm.
and we'll focus on like the iPads that children's had, and then mm-hmm. the Nexus tablets, and all of that will come from this budget line. And the bulk, I didn't need as much budget that was in there, so I moved that over to Electronic Resources and moved all of the Overdrive and everything into just our regular Electronic Resources budget.
Which makes a lot of sense.
Right.
Because that's what they are.
Right. Yeah. So that's where the experiential materials budget line mm-hmm. was born. But then I wasn't even on the Telescope committee, but I was sort of, mm-hmm. can we use the experiential materials budget for this? Because that's what it is. So when we started working with the Lake County Astronomy Society on getting telescopes into the library, that is when it turned into, like, after that project kind of completed and was a success, we were like, well, what else do we circulate then?
Yeah. It became the awesome budget line.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's really a very experimental, budget line where kind of anything could come from it. And,
yeah.
The possibilities are kind of endless, and I'm really excited to see what we do next. We have fishing poles.
Yeah.
That was a really cool one. Some of the stuff is still sort of technology-based. We're working on Roku and GoPro cameras to circulate out of there. But, you know, we've talked about so many different things. Ghost hunting kits.
Ghost hunting kits. Yes.
And, you know, musical instruments could come from there.
Mm-hmm.
The possibilities are just endless. Tools. I keep thinking about how we should have tools come from there.
Yeah.
We haven't done it yet, but we could.
I'm super into the tool library idea. So why do you think this sort of material needs a dedicated budget line? And why do you feel like it's important for libraries to have these sorts of materials?
Okay, so the dedicated budget line is really for me when I have to answer to the auditor about what did you spend on AV and what did you spend on print? Like, there are some very specific questions I have to answer and, that I have to report to the board and stuff like that. So for me, I can take this entire experiential materials budget line and make it its own thing, and mm-hmm. I don't have to worry about if it's AV or print or whatever. It's just there.
Yeah.
And it doesn't count as anything else that goes. It's still a material budget line. It's still, like, I will talk to the auditor about that, but it's not something that I have to worry about in my calculations for everything else. And then what was your second
part? Well, I also think, like, part of that is, I think it also shows that the library values experimentation.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the idea that we have this certain amount of money dedicated to non-traditional things. And non-traditional does not mean video games and movies, because those are not non-traditional anymore. Like, we are so far past those being non-traditional. Like, this is the
thing. Those are AV. That's,
yes!
That's like, very traditional to me.
This is the think outside the box budget line. Mm-hmm. And I know, as a collector and as someone who is on this group of people who we, decide what to bring in or what to play with, and it's, I, I really think that it's almost a signal to the community and to, I know me as an employee, that this experimentation, building experiences, this is something we value mm-hmm. at the Eel Area Library, which I think is really great. And I was going to say also, why do you feel like it's important for libraries to have these sorts of materials?
So I think it's important, sort of along the lines that I had already kind of hit on, that, mm-hmm. I learned how to play bass recently.
Yeah.
I happened to look into already having a bass on hand, but if I didn't, how awesome would it be to be able to go to my local public library yeah. and check out a bass for a couple weeks and see if it's even something I can stand up and hold?
Yeah.
You know? I could go to a music store and do that briefly, but I can't take it. It's like a test drive. Like
yeah.
you only get to experience so much in those very brief moments, and then you're kind of stuck with that thing forever.
Yeah.
Same thing with tablets. Like you were kind yeah. of, you get that little look around in the store, and then if you don't like it, well, too bad, because you bought it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And sometimes you can. I'm not going to get into the whole returning things, but anyway, I feel like. That is an important, I also feel like it signals a level of fun to our patrons, and it's something that is very hyper-local.
Yeah.
Fishing poles, we have a lake, we're in Lake Zurich.
We're like literally kitty corner from the lake.
Right.
Yeah.
And who is, if you're not like a professional fisherman, why would you buy like an expensive mm-hmm. Fishing kit to take out to this lake if you're only going to use it once or twice while you're on vacation or visiting your family for the weekend, or you only have so long to actually spend in Lake Zurich on the lake?
Mm-hmm.
Like, why would you spend that money? You more than likely wouldn't. And we actually circulate them in packs of, like, family things, so it
yes.
can be kind of a family
so cool.
recreational thing. So to me, that's, like, you can get more hyper-local, I think, with experiential materials than you can with almost anything else.
Oh, I love that. That makes me so happy. It's so true that your experiential materials are almost a direct reflection of your community.
Right.
Because even if you think about it, so many of our experiential materials are community partnerships
right.
as well.
Yeah, but like County Astronomy Society,
yeah.
like we partnered with them. When we're looking into the ghost hunting kits, like I am looking at local ghost hunting groups to like give us input
so
onto
cool.
what they would want. And honestly, that's kind of a thing that I toss around as something that I like because I watch Supernatural all the time. but, if there's an interest there, I think mm-hmm. we should explore anything that's brought to our attention that could really fill a need that we haven't met yet.
That's great.
As a library. And who else is going to fill that need?
Yeah.
There's nobody else other than libraries who can find those needs and then fill them.
Absolutely.
Without charging anything.
What advice, let's say someone listening right now is like, okay, I'm in. I want an experiential materials budget line.
And do not call it a Library of Things budget line.
Yeah.
Or a things budget line.
Otherwise, Sarah will not be happy.
Yeah.
So what advice would you give someone who wants to start this kind of budget?
I think work with your community is probably the biggest one. Also, get everybody else in your library on board. Like, find your team in the library. I think one of the reasons why the telescope team was a success and moved into the experiential materials team was because of who was on it. We have some really awesome catalogers who've been involved
yeah.
from the get-go on these experiential materials things because, especially, like, we have a lot of, the thing I haven't talked about is, like, our circuit kits and our children's, like, children's has a lot of experiential materials
yes.
and a lot of, like, room for experiential materials because that's how children, like,
oh, yeah.
learn is experiencing the world. I mean, they read, too, and we obviously want to develop that literacy, but there's so many other kinds of learning that we can facilitate, and so that's where that kind of goes in for children. So I haven't even touched on that. I've mostly talked about adult experiential materials, but we have, like, the curiosity kits and things like
mm-hmm.
that are all geared toward children. So to me, like, find your team of people who are on board with this kind of experimentation and with this kind of, like, figuring out where the best desk is to circulate these things,
yeah.
what the best policies are going to be, how you're going to put them in the catalog.
Yeah.
Because, again, it does not matter if you put them on your website. If they can't find them in your catalog,
it might as well not exist. Really.
Yeah.
It might as well. It,
right.
It's one of, I think, the biggest thing I've learned in the past 2 years of working just here is how crucial it is to have the catalog presence.
Yeah.
It's really important. Right. I mean, I would say the catalogers on those committees are some of the most important members.
And like I said, all of the catalogers that we have here have mm-hmm. worked at a public services desk. So yeah. they are all like understanding of who our patrons are mm-hmm. and how they work and what their needs might be as well.
Yeah.
And they are catalogers with a very detail-oriented job, but they have ideas too,
yeah.
as I kind of mentioned. So they have a lot of questions. They are always the ones who come up with the best
questions
because they want to know how long they're thinking in terms of what the metadata that they're going to have to fill out is.
Yeah.
And so they're thinking like, how long is this going to circulate? Is it going to be holdable or non-holdable? Is it going to, what fields are we going to put this mm-hmm. under, you know? So to me, they're a very valuable asset in the whole scheme of things. And, that's why, and it's another committee, the Experiential Materials Committee is another one similar to Cyber Squad, where we have presence from all the public desk. And so we really work hard, and I'm kind of the representative from IT on it as mm-hmm. well, so that when there's stuff like the optical drives that are, kind of an IT-based item, mm-hmm. I can work with the IT team to make sure that we're getting the right kinds of things
yeah.
and setting them up the right way, for that. So.
Awesome. Well, I think that's about it.
Okay.
So thank you so much. Thank you so much for coming and taking time out of your busy day to talk to me.
No problem. Thank you, Via.
If you'd like to learn more about the show or listen to past episodes, you can visit circulatingideas.com or follow us on Twitter at CircIdeas. We're also on Tumblr at circulatingideas.tumblr.com, or you can like us on Facebook at facebook.com/circulatingideas. If you have comments, questions, or suggestions for future interviews, you can drop us a line at mail@circulatingideas.com. Music is by Pamela Klicka. Thank you for listening, and keep circulating the ideas.
Do you want to talk again real fast?
Sure, I will talk again all day.